The Athletic.
It's the Totally Football Show, European edition. Today, all the top continental stories with Conte Botch Swap Watch, Bayern PSG role titles, Premier League versus Liga Champions League showdown, and Salernitana show-off and shoe-off in Serie A. All that and more in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. All right, listener. Well done for making it. You're just in time for an exciting Totally. It's the week commencing Monday, 25th of April. We've got with us Alvaro Romeo and Julien Laurent and James Horncastle. Christoph Biermann is going to be along a little bit later. Hello, boys.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Nice. All right. Big week. Of course, there's Champions League on the way. There's titles that have been sorted out. A cup final too. So much stuff. Vandelay Industries, right, since there's James Horncastle, you've had 12 solid hours to come up with the moment of the weekend. No excuses this time. All right, Vandelay Industries, let's see how he does as we introduce Moments of the Weekend with Paddy Power. James.
I didn't need 12 hours, needed 12 seconds. However, right. Jules will tell you that I'll probably give you 12 answers.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. Okay.
So it's a toss-up between two, but because Jules is already staring at me, I'm going to have to go with one.
All right.
Which is going to be how Sunday night ended, really.
Oh, yeah.
I know what you're thinking, but I have to choose one. So it's got to be Milan, last-minute goal, Sandro Tonali.
Tonali non ci arriva. Pallone che rimane in aria. Ibrahimovic, Tonali davanti alla porta, tiro a rete. Ha raddoppiato il Milan. Raddoppio del Milan, è il raddoppio di Sandro Tonali che mette sul photo finish.
Okay, he was born in Lodi, came through the ranks at Brescia, but Milan fan, kind of born and bred, scoring a goal which keeps the title race alive, kept Milan at the top of the table after all the pressure that Inter have put on them, and just a magnificent celebration as well. As soon as the ball leaves his foot, he rips his shirt off instinctively, leaps over the advertising hoardings and goes and celebrates with the Milan fans, 14,000 of them. They're outnumbering, I think, or close to outnumbering the Lazio fans because they were protesting against ticket prices. So that in itself was just the goal we'd all like to score, I think. So there we go.
Yeah. Brilliant assist by Ibrahimovic, who was excellent when he came on to set up that last-minute winner. We'll talk about that later on. We'll also talk about, undoubtedly, moments 2 through to 12, the leading one of which will be Davide Nicola waving his shoe around at the heart of the survival storm that is Salernitana. But Alvaro, what about you? What's your moment of the weekend?
Well, there are three that I would like to single out, but I'm going to stick to one, all related to the Spanish Cup final, okay? Look, it could be Pellegrini tweeting his own phone number on Sunday night by accident. He removed that like 10 seconds after he did it.
How did he do that?
It was a screenshot of his own number. He just tweeted it, and apparently many people managed to get a screenshot of that. And wow. I don't know how much they pestered him on Sunday night, but maybe a little bit. Then could be Joaquin as well announcing during the celebrations that he is going to extend his contract for one more year, he's going to stay one more year at Betis. This is not official yet, but Joaquin said that. And, of course, Betis winning the Spanish Cup in a penalty shootout, a beautiful final and a great win for Betis because they didn't win or they hadn't won a trophy since 2005. So we know that they will win the Europa League, but it was apotheosic, really, because the final was very nice.
Haven't won a final since 2005, and Joaquin was there for that one as well. Extraordinary story.
We've all seen the photo.
Yeah, when?
Nice. Okay. We'll be hearing about your other moments later on, Alvaro. Julien, what could possibly be your moment of the weekend?
We are the champions, my friend. What title and season, though.
Were you whistling, so Jules? Were you at the Parc des Princes? Did you leave with the other options?
I was cursing. I could not go because I was at Arsenal Manchester United on Saturday, so I could not go. Right. I would not have gone anyway. I was cursing the television in our house, cursing Pochettino, cursing all the players, Neymar, all of them. It was the most underwhelming, really, of obviously because, as you know, and you tease me enough, it's a young club, as in. But all the titles that they've won, I was alive, basically, the 10. Mm. The two before the Qataris, and then the 8 since. And of all 10, not that I remember too much the first one, especially because I was only 5, but this is the most underwhelming. And so Saturday was nice, but not so nice.
Right, Jules. All right. Those are the moments of the weekend, and we're going to start on Paris.
The Totally Football Show European Edition's Moment of the Weekend, brought to you by Paddy Power. If one leg of your 4+-fold ACCA lets you down, get a free bet on all football leagues and all markets. Max free bet £10, minimum odds 1-5 per leg, online exclusive, no shop bets. T's and C's apply. Plus be gambleaware.org.
Messi, oh, il est sublime, entrée de surface de réparation, en rupture, une frappe surpuissante qui part dans la lucarne de Jean-Louis Lucas qui n'y peut rien.
Okay, Paris Saint-Germain taking on Lens this weekend, 67th minute, with the score deadlocked at 0-0, up steps young Lionel Messi, scores a wonderful goal, at which the ultras all get up and leave. Jules.
Yeah, that was some of the most surreal scenes I've ever seen, really. We knew before, because the ultras had announced it, that they would leave the stadium to go and celebrate the title outside of the stadium instead of inside, because they didn't want to celebrate with the players and the team and the coaching staff and the club. So PSG are in the lead. So we know even if Lens scored, they were not going to score 2. They went down to 10 men. So
right.
The title was there. So they left and went outside, literally at the gate of the Parc des Princes, and then starting having a party, flares, everything, chanting, all that. It was great. Great colors, great atmosphere. But inside the stadium, it was dead. It was crazy. There was nothing. I mean, some players went straight into the dressing room. People left the ground so quickly. I'd never seen anything like this before.
Jules, they didn't want to celebrate with the players. Is this, what, all because they lost the game with Real Madrid?
Yeah, it's still the protests from that. But again, this is not the main... There's more issues than just losing to Real Madrid, even the way they did. It's the way the club is being run. The fact that it's the marketing side of things clearly seems to have taken over the sporting side of things. It's Pochettino. They don't think the players care enough, or some of them certainly care enough. So they didn't want to celebrate with them. I mean, Mbappe said he didn't really care that much. Like, as in, the fans do what they want. Mm. He was still very happy to be French champion again. And he celebrated with his teammates who are his friends. And that was it. But even if you're okay with it, he looked really strange. Leonardo had some stronger words for it than the players. But yes, the way it was.
Mm. All right, well... Summer's going to bring some changes, it looks like, on Paris. The word was this weekend that Pochettino was out already, if not officially out, then certainly it's a matter of days, with Le Parisien reporting that Antonio Conte had called up PSG to say, how about hiring me? What do you think? Is this all happening?
So I think Pochettino, as we've mentioned on the show before, is not going to be there next year. And I don't even think he wants to be there himself. So he's got a contract. They will have to pay him off. I think he'd be happy with that. And then he can see what he will do coming back to England, which is clearly his priority. Not to United, but maybe somewhere else. I don't know.
Well,
maybe
a job swap. That makes sense.
I'm not sure it's a good idea for him to go back to Spurs to start with.
All right.
I'm not sure it's a good idea for PSG to hire Antonio Conte. Anyway, what's funny with the Conte... offering himself is that Fabio Paratici a few weeks ago offered himself as well when he learned that they were also looking potentially to replace Leonardo. I think this might can happen. So you can get two Italians for the price of one, which, you know, knowing some Italian people lived in Italy, I'm not sure this is the greatest idea, but you know, why not? I'm kidding. the only issue I've got with Conte, as much as I think he's a great coach and a great manager, he's a winner, except in Europe, where
PSG then.
Well, no, because they want to win in Europe. So go and get someone who's actually won before in Europe, not who's been a disaster in Europe. Yeah. Like Conte.
Domestically dominant, a disaster in Europe. Exactly. There could be a better pairing.
Well, yeah, except that that's not really the direction they want to go to anymore. So
right.
I don't know. I mean, certainly, I think the players would have to work harder. That's for sure. If Antonio went over. But I don't think he's the answer. Not that I would want to keep Pochettino anywhere. I would rather Pochettino to go. But Zidane, as we know, is the priority. If they can't convince Zidane, though, then they will have to look somewhere else.
All right. Did Conte, do you think he did ring up and say?
Yeah, definitely.
Any work going?
Right, not him.
But his people.
It's not.
Definitely. Interesting comments from sporting director Leonardo, meantime, on his future with the club. He said, with me, it is difficult. Without me, it is impossible. That is sort of my own Ibra thing.
Yeah. Yeah, he also said that he acknowledges that he made mistakes.
That was good of him.
Yeah, that was, I mean, Leo, we could have told you, bro. We don't need you to acknowledge anything. We knew already. Everybody does.
Right.
How bad he's been. I mean,
at the same time, this is 8 titles in 10 years. So, I mean, something's going right at the club. You lost
a lot of money, James. I mean, it's amazing what happens when you buy the best players in the world.
Sure, but
that helps.
Leonardo hasn't been there all the time as well. Remember, he went back to Milan and he had such a great period there, signing Paqueta, Piontek and Castillejo. Amazing work.
True as well. True as well. But domestically, you know, apart from the Lille season and the Monaco one was really the one because the Lille one, there was the change of manager, etc. Same with when Montpellier won the title. But the Monaco one, they were really beaten by a better team than them. But apart from that, they were always the best team. So the best team should really win every time over a long season. The Champions League is different because, as we've seen, it's not always the best team really that wins it. But the league should be yours. So, of course, it's a great achievement. And to do 10 and equal the record by Saint-Étienne, well done.
Yes.
But again, this I don't think it's enough. And even if Leonardo has his part of credit for it, and others have had as well, it's not enough. I wouldn't be surprised. So I think Poch is going to go. They're going to kick him out. And Leonardo is on a thin thread. He might just about save his life because, as you mentioned with the quote, he's such a good talker. But I wouldn't be surprised either if he was gone too.
So I don't know whether Conte offered himself. In fact, people around him have kind of denied this. I do know who did offer themselves to PSG as a sporting director a year ago because he wrote about this in his latest book. It was Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Yeah.
So maybe Zlatan, coming to the end of his time at AC Milan, maybe he is the man to run this project, Jules. What do you say?
I imagine. What could go wrong?
Just to be clear, whoever does come in, they need to win the title every year and the Champions League as well. Otherwise, it's not a success. Is that right? Because that seems to be the parameters we're looking at.
It's not that, but that's the same for every big club. Every big club wants to win
the Champions League. You don't see other clubs like walking out on their title celebrations because they lost to Real Madrid.
No, but the Ultras, this is a bit unfair. The Ultras didn't protest because they lost to Real Madrid.
Okay.
They protested for loads of other things, like the way the club is being run, where they think about selling shirts more than actually winning football matches, how bad the football has been all season, because it's been terrible, and many other reasons as well. It's not just because they were knocked out. That hurt, that defeat in Madrid. Of course it did, like the remontadas before, but it's not just the problem. If you think that's the only problem, then no, this is wrong.
No, okay, well, that's what I'm asking. Also, potentially on his way out is that Kylian Mbappe fella, although Leonardo saying the talks are ongoing. Some suggestions there might be another club now in the mix. Some suggestions that other club might be Liverpool. Jules?
No, I don't think so.
No? All right.
I don't think so.
Okay.
And, I mean, everything's always possible. But right now, certainly what I'm being told is that it's either PSG or Real Madrid, which we've known, that he's still undecided. Maybe that's not true. Maybe that's true. We certainly know that his mother was in Doha this week or last week, half for the holidays, half also to be talking to Nasser Al-Khelaifi, who is there for his Ramadan month. We know that he's going to go to Madrid as well. Not Kylian himself, but the family is going to Madrid as well to see Florentino Perez. So at some point, he will make his mind up, probably at the end of the season, maybe in June, or certainly announce it at that time. So I really thought it would be earlier, but he's taking his time. I think he's taking his time because he doesn't know yet. So we will have to see. I think PSG are pushing hard. The image right is a big thing. and they're ready to give more than Real Madrid in that sense. So we will see. But I don't think it's a done deal. Yeah, but it's between the two.
We'll talk a little bit more about Liga later on. But just a quick mention for the Saint-Étienne-Monaco game, which finished in a 4-1 win for Monaco, their sixth victory in a row, keeping them in the mix at least for the Champions League playoff place. Mm. The exciting thing was the fact that Amazon mic'd up the referee.
That was cool,
game.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Pas de temps d'arrêt sur la dernière foulée, OK? Pas de temps d'arrêt sur la dernière foulée. Yes, go on your line, please.
He's playing the ball.
Not only the ball, go on your line, please.
Really cool. You saw Riyad Boudebous, for example, the Saint-Etienne playmaker, coming to him and said, listen, Golovin and Volant, they're terrible players. They keep kicking us all around. Like when you go into your teacher and say, James Richardson at the back, he's really annoying. It was exactly the same. He said, keep an eye on Golovin. Golovin especially, he's really naughty. Yeah. And he said, keeping the word, he's naughty. They're really naughty. And I'm like, what? But it was really cool. The ref, for example, at some point said to Gourna, who's one of the really bright prospects from Saint-Etienne, young player, saying, hey, stop making those fouls 70 yards away from your goal because that's a silly yellow. And I think it's great to have those little bit. This is much better than what we saw, obviously, from the stands, because the Ultras, again, at Saint-Etienne, it was their 30th anniversary, and they created chaos. The game was suspended. At some point, we wondered if the game would restart even. So another eventful weekend in Liga.
Also interesting, the fact that the referee appeared to be officiating with a kazoo. But, yeah. Anyway, okay. Well, Saint-Etienne remain in the relegation playoff place. Yes. Now, PSG picking up their 8th title in 10 years. Bayern picking up their 10th in a row. Of course, we'll be hearing about that later. But next up, we're on to the Champions League.
So, Mr. Guardiola, what's troubling you?
I'm very tired, Doctor.
Tired, right.
No, I'm very tired of winning. It's just too easy at the moment, you know. I need a challenge.
Like finally winning the Champions League with Man City?
Hey, come on.
Will Pep finally do it? At Paddy Power, we can't guarantee you a trophy, but we can guarantee you money back as a free bet if one leg of your 4+4 bet builder lets you down. Paddy Power!
Pre-match online bet builder bets only. Min odds 1 to 5 per leg. Max free bet £10 per day. 7-day free bet expiry. Excludes enhanced match odds. Eligibility restrictions and T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Champions League semi-finals. You've got Liverpool against Villarreal on Wednesday. Man City up against Real Madrid on Tuesday. Woo, Alvaro. Hey, 2 weeks on from those battles with Atletico Madrid, it's the other Madrid team for Pep. It's going to be a different kind of game, I'm thinking.
Of course, it's going to be much more difficult to start with because Real Madrid this season, numerically, they are doing really well. And we have heard even Pep Guardiola in the press conference ahead of the game praising Real Madrid a lot. And the truth is that I think that Manchester City and Guardiola understand that Real Madrid is the kind of team that when they are in trouble, they know how to find the solution. And this is something that Manchester City maybe doesn't know how to do so well, because Manchester City is a team that normally responds when the wind is favorable, the tidal is favorable. They are probably a better team than Real Madrid right now, but Real Madrid has a certain resilience that Pep Guardiola is very aware of. So I think that this tie is going to be quite interesting. I believe as well that what happens in the Etihad is going to be quite important, but probably at Santiago Bernabéu this is going to be decided. I mean, Real Madrid has to make sure that they play slightly better than they did play half of the tie against Chelsea and half of the tie against the PSG, because otherwise they are going to be out. I mean, they cannot keep on playing with fire more time. They have learned, they are rested because they didn't play this weekend, and I'm looking forward to it, James.
Okay, they've put out, as you mentioned, Paris Saint-Germain and the holders, Chelsea. Man City, meanwhile, navigated both legs of their clashes with Atletico Madrid and before that Sporting Lisbon without conceding a single goal, though. So a different level, perhaps, of opponent. What are the Spanish press thinking of this? How worried are they?
They are not so worried because Real Madrid has already reached this semi-final. They've been here before. They are just expecting to see what Real Madrid is capable of. There is an understanding in Spain as well that Manchester City is a really big team, but probably Liverpool was the most dangerous opponent for Real Madrid, even more than Manchester City, on the basis of what we have seen in April especially. And there is anticipation as well for meeting Guardiola. At the end of the day, Guardiola has met Real Madrid as a manager many times. I think that it's been in total 19 games of Guardiola against Real Madrid, and he has only lost 3 of them. Oof. 2 with Bayern, 1 with Barcelona. So the numbers of Guardiola against Real Madrid are very good, with the exception of what happened with Bayern when they lost, I think, that 5-0 in the aggregate. Real Madrid winning with Ancelotti, by the way, 4-0 away at the Allianz Arena. But generally speaking, this is a very... very interesting game, I repeat again, because there is a clash of styles here. In Manchester City, again, they are going to have the possession, the control, but that doesn't mean that Real Madrid is going to feel uncomfortable not having the ball. It's going to be very key as well to know who plays in the right back, I think, because Kyle Walker is still doubtful for the game. Ruben Diaz against Watford didn't look totally sharp. And Joao Cancelo, I believe he's suspended. So if Vinicius has a free hit on the left channel, well, I think Manchester City can be in trouble there.
Mm. Jules and James, what do you think?
I think it's going to be great. I can't wait for this one, because you can't take away the fact that Real Madrid was also lucky. As great as they've been, and as good as Kylian, as good as Karim has been, they...
He said Kylian won- then. Said yeah, the Freudian said slip.
Shut up.
What do you know?
As great as Karim Benzema, the Dream, did...
Yeah,
they rode their luck for 3/4 of each tie, really. Let's be honest. Well, not so much for Chelsea, but certainly with PSG. But even Chelsea in that second leg. So I don't think, again, I don't think they've got any sort of margin, certainly not against a team like City. So I think if Pep doesn't mess up the starting lineup, and if City can have one of those performances where they have a lot of the ball, and we know that this Real Madrid side cannot really press, they're not very good at pressing and not very good at recovering the ball either, then I think they could be under so much pressure that it might be very difficult for them. And if Modric is not on a good day, or Courtois is not on a good day, and certainly the ball doesn't get to Benzema, then I think they might struggle as well with the ball. So I think it's going to be fascinating to see what Carlo does, and you would expect Valverde to play again like they did in the quarterfinals. And then for Pep, see what he does. But it's going to be a fascinating contest.
I think that deep inside, James, Guardiola always admired Real Madrid's character and resilience as a player and as a manager. Because, Real Madrid has been probably worse than their opponents in the knockout tie of the Champions League. They have played 4 games, right? I think that they were worse at the Parc des Princes. The first half against PSG at Bernabeu, they were the worst side. And then Chelsea played much better than them at Santiago Bernabeu. And yet, Real Madrid managed to go through. And they have won the Champions League a few times, just suffering in the quarterfinals. I remember against Juventus with that late penalty on Cristiano Ronaldo, Lucas Vázquez, I don't remember.
Yeah, you have a bin for a heart. That was it.
Yeah. They know how to deal with these situations. So that's why I was saying before that no matter what happens at the Etihad, I think Santiago Bernabeu will be the judge of this tie. And also, many Real Madrid players, and this has been defying many omens, they are very rested as well. They are old, Luka Modric especially, also Karim Benzema is almost 35 now, but they've been playing the whole season, many games, and they seem to be sharp physically. So I think that Carlo Ancelotti's planification of this season has been brilliant. When Barcelona, Atletico and Sevilla weren't getting the points in La Liga, Real Madrid got the massive, massive point gap with them. Then they've been able to relax in La Liga lately, recently. Not playing 100%, at least. But they are in this position again. I don't think that many clubs in Europe can do this. Like being suffering so much and at the same time reaching these stages.
But there's a time where it's not going to work again. Do you see what I mean? I think that there's a limit to which you can ride your luck in the sense, if that's it, and there's a limit until your experience and you know how in those kind of situations can carry you. Unless they play better in the two legs, like really you should do to win a Champions League match, those kind of miracles don't happen again. Do you see what I mean? And it might happen again in the semi-final, I don't know. But usually there's a point where... the limits are showed, and then unfortunately for you, you don't win again in the same way that you've won before.
Jules seems to feel a humbling evening is on the way for Real Madrid at the Etihad, whereas Alvarez quietly confident. I'm wondering, James, where you stand on this.
Well, I mean, there was no La Liga at this weekend. So, I mean, no. to pick up on what Alvaro says about freshness, I mean, that's going to play in their favour. You know, I think it's the family affair.
Man City barely had a game.
Yes. I mean, you've got the whole family affair, Carlo Ancelotti. You know, I mean, his son-in-law's the nutritionist. You know, clearly he's preparing them some great food. They've got Antonio Pintus back. You know, Pintus, who was the fitness coach when Zidane was there. He then went to work with Conte when Conte was at Inter. So, you know, they've got bits and bobs like that going for them, I suppose. But, yeah, I just think City are on a complete other level. However, there's something just so primal about Real Madrid, which is that they reduce it all to kind of like, not individual battles, but like, I am better than you and I will prevail in those 1v1s. And, you know, often it's, yeah, I can completely see an eventuality in which, you know, Vinicius on the counterattack or something, or on the dribble creates something, or, you know, a nothing cross that's behind Karim Benzema is all of a sudden somehow turned in, you know. So, yeah, on paper, absolutely, City are the better side. But City have been the better side on paper than any other team in Europe for the last 5-6 years. So, you know,
and yet, let's see. All right. Alvaro, you were saying that the Spanish press regard Liverpool as the more dangerous opponent. So what do they make of Villarreal's chances of making it to the final?
Well, I will speak in representation of all the Spanish press now. I think that we all think that it's going to be the impossible test for Villarreal. I really believe that now. I mean, the attacking sequences of Liverpool can be endless. Liverpool attacking is like a tidal wave after wave after wave. And the level of those attacks is very difficult to defend as well. For example, Bayern, I believe that they never put good crosses against Villarreal. They never really storm out there and take Villarreal from the scruff of the neck. But I think that Liverpool can do that. In fact, Liverpool cross a lot of balls. In the Premier League, for instance, Trent Alexander-Arnold and Robertson, they have provided a total of 22 assists, and in the Champions League they have provided 5. That tells you that they are excellent crossers. And Pau Torres and Albiol, they will have to work really, really, really hard to clear all the danger that comes into their box. Probably Unai Emery will have to close down many channels, because against Bayern, and especially against Juve, they close down the central areas. But against Liverpool, they will have to close the central areas and also the flanks. So, you know, probably Unai Emery wish he got 12 or 13 players on the pitch, but this is not possible. I think that this is very difficult, more difficult even without Gerard Moreno, because he's probably not going to be available for the game, even though Unai Emery hasn't confirmed it yet at the time of recording this show. Villarreal has a good counter-attack, but Gerard Moreno is a pivotal part of it, because he knows how to solve attacking counter-attacks for Villarreal. So Danjuma will probably have a lot of scoring responsibility. Against Valencia last Wednesday, he took it, he embraced it, he scored a couple of goals. But I think that Liverpool has two defenders that, unlike Bayern defenders and especially unlike Juventus defenders, they are very self-sufficient. If you have a run or a race against Virgil van Dijk one-on-one with 40 meters behind you, Virgil van Dijk is going to win it, probably. And same thing applies to whoever plays alongside Virgil van Dijk, Konate, Matip. And I think that that's why this is the ultimate challenge for Villarreal, because they are playing against the best defenders and against the team that doesn't stop attacking. So yes, very difficult teams.
Mm. James, you saw Villarreal on
he's
one
an
part.
Expert, isn't he? He's an expert in
not
Valencian
just football.
Football,
but also you were there in Turin when it was when Juve was supposed to do the Yellow Submarine, and what do you or Jules give the Yellow Submarine any more chance of making it through to this impossible final?
Well, looking back at the Juventus game, both legs, I mean, Juventus scored after what, 3 minutes or something like that with Vlahovic at La Ceramica. And then Villarreal took control of the game and dominated in a really impressive way. You know, I mean, it was almost like they had 6 or 7 players across Juventus's back line. You know, we're used to seeing now teams attack with 5. They attacked with 7 and completely squashed Juventus into their own penalty area. The second leg was different. You see so many sides to this Villarreal team, which I think is one of the things that gives them a chance, because I do think they are kind of sort of masters in situational football, really. When they have to defend, they can defend. When they have to attack, they have to attack. When the game is slow, they can play slow. When it's fast, they can play fast. In the second leg against Juventus, I mean, they were very lucky for the first half for it to still be 0-0. And then they waited for their moment, they made the right changes, and the house came down at Juventus. And likewise against Bayern, first leg, a ceramic, they shouldn't have just won 1-0, they should have won 2 or 3-0. Mm-hmm. And I do think Bayern are a team that attack and attack and attack, wave after wave after wave. And they put up with that in the second leg and coped with it. So I've been impressed with how they defended. I've been impressed with how they've managed games within games. So I don't think necessarily that this is a fait accompli. You know, I do think that Villarreal do have a chance. I mean, how many times do people want to write this team off? You know, it happened in the Europa League last year. It's happened in the Champions League at every stage so far,
And the way that Liverpool were frustrated for an hour against Everton maybe gives some sense that Villarreal can do that for the full 90. Then what happens when they go back to the Ceramica? We shall see. Jules, any thoughts, or should we move on?
No, I think it's going to be a really interesting game again. Two different styles. It'd be good to see. I don't know what's best for a team like Villarreal though. Is it to go away first, or to host the second leg when usually, I mean, if you take the lead in the first leg at home, and then I think defensively they can work really well away from home in the second leg to defend the lead. You know, what happened if they lose, let's say, against Liverpool in the first leg, and then at home they have to chase the game and then obviously opening up and go for it? I think then that would play so much into Liverpool's hands. So I think a team like Villarreal would probably prefer being the other way around than actually hosting the second leg.
Okay. Well, we'll see what happens Tuesday, Wednesday. Of course, then Thursday brings Europa League and Europa Conference League semi-finals, which we'll be discussing very shortly. Next up, though, Christoph Biermann and some Copa del Rey final.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. And with Paddy Power, if something doesn't go quite to plan, you can get your money back as a free bet if one leg of your bet builder lets you down. And that's good news for Watford fans as they get ready to appoint their fourth manager of the season. Pre-match bet builders only. Get your stake back as a free bet. Minimum 4 plus legs. Maximum free bet is £10. Excludes enhanced match odds. Online exclusives and T's and C's apply.
Va Miranda. Toma distancia. Está en la cal. Le pega Miranda. El lanzamiento. Gol.
Copa del Rey final, Alvaro. It started Saturday, finished sometime on Sunday in a victory for Real Betis Balompié on penalties, 5-4. As you mentioned at the start, their first major trophy since winning this same competition back in 2005. And emotional scenes at the end. I read those since that Joaquin, it's not going to be his farewell as a Betis player.
It looks like it won't, because during the celebrations, well, on Saturday after the game, a pitch reporter asked him, are you going to stay or not? And Joaquin said, how can I leave now? So he was kind of hinting already that maybe he would stay. Of course, Betis and him will have to reach an agreement. But on Sunday, he was telling his people, shouting out loud to the city of Sevilla, that he was going to stay for one more season. Hopefully that will happen, because he was born in 1982. So next season, at the end of it, he might be potentially 42 years old. He was born in 1981, sorry. So he will be 42 years old. And it will be a very, very impressive story, because I was reading today that the only player who has won more than one title with Betis is Joaquin. Joaquin has won two titles with Betis. No other Real Betis player has won more than one title with Betis, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And Joaquin also had a very long trip before he returned to Betis. He went to Valencia, and he was all right there after endless rumors that he was going to end up at Real Madrid. Then he went to Málaga, and he became a very important player for Málaga, especially when Málaga started getting poor and selling the big players. Joaquin stayed there and defended the club excellently. Then he went to Fiorentina. Probably James knows much more about his performances in there. And then he returned to Betis, and when it looked like those were his last 2 years for Betis, he did many impressive things. He scored his first ever hat-trick against Athletic Club Bilbao when he was already 38 or 39 years old. He won the cup again. And the other day, it's not only that he won the trophy with Betis, it's the fact that he did a couple of accelerations at the age of 40 that left many opponents behind. And Valencia is regarded like a very physical team. So maybe Joaquin is not ready to play 90 full minutes at full speed, but he's still a very good quality player, and he's got the quality in his right foot, and he is defending, you know, Betis pride everywhere very well.
Magnificent. Manuel Pellegrini in his tracksuit, as you know. They win 63% of matches when he is in the tracksuit, and only 39% when he doesn't. So that was huge. And
that's what data departments are for, isn't it?
Yep. Why would you ever not wear your tracksuit? Can you imagine the players if they see him turn up in a suit? No. But just briefly, winning for Betis in a season that's been a bit mixed after much initial promise, to win the Copa del Rey again in their own city, Alvaro.
Well, very, very important for Betis, of course. They could have won the... You know, their idea was to make a glorious double, winning the Europa League and the Copa del Rey in La Cartuja in Sevilla. But that is impossible, obviously, because Frankfurt kicked them out. But the season is very successful for Betis, no matter what, because they will be at least in the Europa League the next season. For Pellegrini, this is very important as well, because he got his first ever title in Spain after finding glory in and silverware in the UK. But, you know, he had to win a title in Spain, probably, to be more recognized, and I think that this is a little bit of a vindication by Pellegrini, because he created a team that plays a very good football. They fought a lot against Valencia in a very beautiful final with some of their best players of Betis just giving their best ever level. And I'm talking, for example, about Borja Iglesias, a player that for a couple of years he didn't score so many goals, and suddenly he was amazing. And I put it down to Pellegrini as well. He has worked a lot with him. And Pellegrini, when he was the Real Madrid manager, he was very unfairly treated by Marca, especially by Marca and the previous director of Marca, Eduardo Inda. And some of the headlines of Marca towards Pellegrini were very, very, very disrespectful. So it's very good to see that 11 or 12 years later, finally Pellegrini is like vindicating himself in Spanish football with a title, you know. For those who think that a title is a must for you to be considered as a great manager, well, here we go. He's got one in Spain, so congratulations.
Indeed. All right, excellent stuff. Now, meantime, in the Bundesliga, as mentioned before, Bayern Munich with a 3-1 victory over Borussia Dortmund this weekend, winning the German title for the 10th season in a row. Christoph Biermann joins us now. Hello, Christoph.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
How are you?
Very good. Christoph, yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not in celebratory mood concerning this 10th title for Bayern in a row. I don't know what you think. There were a lot of comparisons with Bulgaria, with Latvia, and even a colleague was saying that maybe Bayern Bayern were getting the record holder from Vanuatu, who has 15 titles in a row. So,
all right. Okay. FC Bayern, more like. You know, nice. 10th season in a row. 10th season in a row, Christoph, that we've had a big debate about how one-sided the Bundesliga is and how to fix that.
Yeah, it is one-sided. It's not so one-sided below Bayern. It's quite interesting. I mean, we have been talking about Frankfurt a lot, not in the Bundesliga context, but on the international level. Freiburg has an outstanding season, qualified this week for the German Cup final. Maybe their best ever season in the Bundesliga also. They still have a chance to go to the Champions League. Again, a fantastic season by Union Berlin. One of the listeners complained that I was saying Union Berlin. He said to me, I should say Union Berlin. So I do. and others. I mean, big teams in crisis, Stuttgart and Hertha and so on. So the rest is okay. And we talked about the reasons before. I mean, it's a distribution of wealth. That's easy as that, because the gap between Bayern and the rest is too big.
No, for sure. 10th season in a row, though. The extraordinary thing is that only once in those 10 years has any of their rivals been within even 10 points of them as they took the title, which is just an incredible level of dominance. Jules earlier was describing Paris Saint-Germain's latest title as the worst yet. Is there a similar feeling of ennui with Bayern? I mean, I know it's been a big talking point in Germany, the fact that it's them again.
It's them again. You could see that they are still properly celebrating it. They're happy, and it was the first ever title for Julian Nagelsmann as a coach in senior football. So he was pretty happy, because he was seeing how difficult it is not only to be the coach of a top club in Germany, but to be the Bayern coach. That is something special, something extra. And their season was okay. So I wouldn't say it was the worst of the 10 titles, but it wasn't also impressive. And it could have been impressive if they would have shown more in the Champions League, but they went out against Villarreal, and that was it.
Indeed. Well, it was sweet to win it against Borussia Dortmund. I imagine a 3-1 victory, as a mention. Robert Lewandowski on the score sheet as per usual. He's now on 27 goals in 26 career games against the Gelb-Schwarzen. He might not be facing them next season, though, Christoph. His future.
I would be sure that I think there are two options: that they extend his contract, and and if not, they probably let him go on a free transfer towards the end of next year. I think they won't sell him in summer. I would be hugely surprised.
Ah, okay. All right. Now, meantime, Thursday night is a huge one for some of those other exciting Bundesliga clubs you were mentioning, like Eintracht Frankfurt and RB Leipzig, who could well supply us with an all-German final in the Europa League. Eintracht Frankfurt, who had a 2-2 draw with Hoffenheim at the weekend, will be at West Ham Thursday. Is there going to be another invasion in Stratford?
No. Maybe there will be more Frankfurt supporters there as the 3,000 that they got tickets for. I think it's the allocation. It's only 3,000, so maybe there will be some more, but they won't be another 25,000 or 30,000 people coming to East London, so I would be surprised. For Frankfurt, you could see that the Bundesliga right now is a kind of training field for international football. They had this 2-2 draw, but if you ask me what do we learn from this, my answer would be nothing, because I think most of the players try to not be injured so that they can play in the semifinals. I would say that Frankfurt is the outsider there, not the huge outsider, but I would see West Ham as a favorite. Although they have the advantage of having the second leg at Frankfurt and causing this kind of, I tend to call it chaos or so, but it has a chaotic element to it because everybody is so excited. So these games are overflowing with emotion from the stands and also on the pitch. So that might help Frankfurt in the second leg, but at first they have to get a good result from the first one in London.
Mm. West Ham looking a little bit tired though. Of late, a lot of injuries, particularly at the back, and Frankfurt with so many threats, as we saw in that extraordinary match in Barcelona. What about RB Leipzig and Rangers?
Interesting games from Leipzig this week. So they ended their 15 games unbeaten run at home against Union Berlin. And whom they played 4 days before in the semi-final of the German Cup, which they won 2-1 in almost the last minute. And it was interesting because the Bundesliga match on Sunday, Union deserved to win it. And for the first time, Leipzig looked a bit tired and a bit worn out. I think they will rotate a lot for the games or a bit. That's also something Domenico Tedesco, the coach, said that they would do. And I would say so. If West Ham is a bit the favorite in against Frankfurt, I would say Leipzig is a bit the favorite against Rangers. But the same situation, I think. It's in this case, it's Rangers bringing in this emotion and all this energy of a club that is longing for international recognition and so on. And RB Leipzig, with the story they have, they don't have it. So, but they have a lot of quality players, of course.
Mm. A problem for Rangers can be that they don't have any attacking forces right now because Morelos is not there and Roof, I believe that he won't be available for the first leg, and let's see if he's available for the second leg as well. So they don't have like a really good striker to play in this tie.
Mm. They'll need some ruthless finishing. Christoph, thank you so much for being with us today. Look forward to catching up with you next week ahead of those second legs. Who knows what scorelines we'll be discussing then. But have a great week in the meantime.
You too, guys.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Hey, who's up to discuss some Conference League semi-finals? I know I am. Let's see, there's two of them. Final Marseille, that's one. The other is Leicester Roma. Ooh. Hello, Brendan Rodgers against Jose Mourinho. Their relationship dates back to 2004 when Mourinho's Chelsea hired Rodgers to be head of their academy. Crikey. All right, James. Roma going to the King Power on Thursday, having just seen their 12-game unbeaten run ended by a 3-1 defeat to Jose's old club, Inter. What do you think? You're quite bullish, I think, quietly, about Roma's chances. Because of set pieces,
well, look,
right?
I mean, set pieces, yeah, because only Liverpool have scored more in Europe's top five leagues, and we know that Leicester have struggled defending them so far this season. So, yeah, that's encouraging, although, you know, in that defeat to Inter on Saturday night, Roma should have opened the scoring from a set piece. Gianluca Mancini headed over from close range. I mean, the 12-game unbeaten one was in the league. Yeah, they obviously had lost to Bodø Glimt in Norway and then prevailed in the second leg with that Nicolò Zaniolo hat-trick. Zaniolo didn't play at the weekend. He was suspended. So he'll be fresh for this game on Thursday. I think he's the kind of player profiles very well against Premier League teams. Got that kind of drive, that physicality, takes players on. So him and Tammy up front, quite exciting. I think we've got interviews with both in The Athletic before the game starts.
Alan Shearer spoke to Tammy, who is the competition's top scorer. And you spoke to Nicola Zaniolo, and he was... how was he?
Yeah, I mean, he was... Yeah, for a kid who's 22, who's got the kind of weight of the world on his shoulders, because you know he's seen as the biggest talent in Italian football. I know, you know, the Italian papers kind of, you know, go between him and Chiesa all the time, but you know, I mean, to see him just back playing football and scoring that hat trick against Bodo, you know, considering that he'd done the ACL in his left knee and then in his right knee, you know, I think it's taken him a while to get up to speed this season, but he's certainly played a lot, which is encouraging. I think we'll probably start to see the best of him again next season. But yeah, I mean, he was saying that, you know, he doesn't feel like he's had to change his game since getting injured. You know, he hasn't lost a yard of pace or anything and had to become more of a kind of, I don't know, tough tackling midfielder or anything like that. We still see him driving at defences. So that's good. Yeah, so... it's just really interesting how these players who have so much thrust upon them so young, you know, cope with it. You know, I think he's had a lot of scrutiny since he was almost a child, made some mistakes. I think he's held his hands up to that. But yeah, it can't be easy. Not least, yeah, I mean, I think it'd be one thing to be the star of the future, yeah, playing for, yeah, I don't know, Sassuolo. It's another thing doing it for Roma in Rome, because that is a city that can swallow you up and spit you out in no time at all. So let's see. I mean, again, to just go back to that defeat at the weekend, Il Tempo, the newspaper in Rome, their headline was Testa a Leicester, which was that they had their minds on Leicester. I think Inter were just better, but certainly, you know, I think ever since that kind of crazy defeat that Roma suffered to Juventus back in February, when they were 3-1 up and lost 4-3, it is clear that something has kind of clicked mentally for this team, and they either win games late, they hang in games, and I think that's what you kind of need in order to go far in competitions. And I think it's one of the reasons why Roma fans are hopeful. I mean, 100,000 of them were in the queue to buy tickets for the second leg at the Olimpico. Just an incredible atmosphere and people getting behind Mourinho and the team at the moment.
Right, it's going to be really interesting to see Zaniolo, who, as you say, in Italy is regarded as this generational talent, but abroad doesn't have by any means the same kind of profile as maybe Chiesa and the like, because of that long absence with injury. But yes, that's the game coming up at the King Power. Who's going to be facing the winner of that in the final, Jules? Feyenoord or Marseille?
Well, I think Marseille have to be favourite. They're good at the moment. They play well. They won at Reims on Sunday night in a game that was quite a close game against a very defensive team. But Gerson scored a lovely winner, by the way, after coming on. I think Sampaoli would be buzzing. The atmosphere would be exceptional, because both at Feyenoord and in Marseille is going to be fascinating. Two clubs really who are chasing a glory past in Europe. And this is their big opportunity to go and have a final against a big club like Roma, or maybe less a big club, but like Leicester, which would be great. So Feyenoord have a really young team, really good team. They're very entertaining to watch, but they're very open as well. And I think for a tactical team like Marseille, a very intelligent team, this is what I think they should be favourite.
All right. Very good. Well, that's your midweek cup action. Still to come. Oh, my word, what's happened with Barcelona? What happened at Lyon? And some quite extraordinary drama at both ends of the Serie A table. Full details next.
We're all driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. you can use Indeed for scheduling, screening and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. According to their own survey, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. Remember the last time you were hiring and how slow and overwhelming it was? Well, you don't need to go through all that again. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent. And because you listen to the Totally Football Show, Indeed is going to give you a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/totally. That's Indeed.com/totally. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed at Indeed.com. You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
Serie A, everybody. Woohoo! Title race down to two teams this weekend after Milan won, as James mentioned earlier, Inter won on Saturday, and Napoli blew up at Empoli. Empoli, a team that hadn't won in 17 matches. Napoli were 2-0 up against them with 10 minutes to go. And then what happened, James?
Well, I mean, you could say that Liam Henderson happened. I mean, it was a match day in Serie A when two Scotsmen scored for two different teams. Hickey for Bologna and Henderson got the kind of comeback underway. You know, Napoli hadn't lost from 2-0 up since 1942. I think they became only one of four teams in the history of Serie A to throw away a 2-0 lead with only 10 minutes to go. So, yeah, I mean, some inept defending. They did everything to help Henderson score that opener. And likewise, the same for Pinamonti's first goal as well. Came back to win 3-2. Yeah, I think Pinamonti is one of the stories of the season, gone under the radar. A lot of people, again, talking about Scamacca being the Immobile successor, the player they want to see up front. 13 goals for Sassuolo this season, but Pinamonti's got 12. I know Jules remembers him making his debut in the Europa League all those years ago for Inter. He's still very young, so he's had a very good season. And yeah, Empoli kind of snapping this incredible 17-game winless run and doing it against Spalletti, who obviously, you know, lives on a farm not too far away from Empoli with his chickens, Snow White, and, you know, had said that, Empoli is like the Oxford University of clubs. Lots of great coaches have graduated from it, himself included. And unfortunately, well, you think of Sarri as well, and likewise, you know, these Napoli managers who've gone very close to winning the league for the first time since 1990, ultimately losing it and throwing it away in Tuscany.
This looked like the season when it could happen. But what a dismal week! A 1-1 draw with Roma at home on the Monday, and then this game, and then post match, all sorts of tension. Reports of club's vice president De Laurentiis' son punching and kicking lockers. Angry scenes with the travelling fans and the club sent into a punitive training camp retreat, although they'll have to wait for them to find a hotel, apparently, because the one they usually use next to the training ground is all booked already. But anyway, it's not the end of season they were hoping for, and relations between Spalletti and the club taking a very downward turn.
Couple of years of missing out on the Champions League. Remember final day of last year and the Gattuso. You think of the last time they went into Ritura, it probably wasn't the last time, but the most infamous time was after the, I think, Salzburg game in the Champions League group stages, and there was a mutiny, and that was the end of Carlo Ancelotti. And, you know, Spalletti had a fantastic start of the season. They didn't lose until November. And De Laurentiis was saying he's the best coach that he's had, you know, better than those guys I've mentioned, Sarri, Ancelotti. And after the Roma game, was critical of the substitutions, which he felt let Roma back into the game, brought on Juan Jesus, went to a back three, invited pressure. Roma scored that equaliser. And then, of course, you know, throwing away a 2-0 lead. So all is not well. De Laurentiis is kind of known as, you know, being Fumantino, you know, a bit of a fiery character. I'd still expect to see Spalletti there next year. It's been a difficult week for him.
Difficult week. Not far away from Naples, meanwhile, in Salerno, something quite remarkable seems to be happening. A team that looked dead and buried in the relegation battle, bottom of the table. They brought in Davide Nicola, the man who had worked a miracle at Crotone and then rode a bike all the way, the length of the peninsula, to celebrate that achievement. Seems to be on the verge of doing something similar, at least in terms of staying up, with Salernitana. Tell us what's going on, James.
Yeah, it's quite remarkable. I mean, this team could have been kicked out of the league before Christmas. Remember, there was that co-ownership issue. They needed to find a buyer, and they did. And that new buyer came in. He runs the Open University in Italy. He hired Walter Sabatini, a guy who was at Roma for a long time, signed Alisson, Salah, Marquinhos, those kind of guys. Signed an entire new team in January, some of whom have been really good. But Davide Nicola, you mentioned, I mean, a complete Houdini figure in Italian football. You mentioned that Crotone feat of escapology. You know, I mean, 14 points after 29 games, and they got 20 in their last nine, I think. And likewise at Crotone, at Salernitana, I mean, they had 16, so slightly better when he took over.
20 points in their last nine games compared to how many they got in the first 29 games?
It's much better.
It's incredible. I'd forgotten that difference was
incredible thing is that they have Frank Ribéry, and Ribéry's, you know, it's not like
he was involved in the winner as
he
well.
He came on at halftime, didn't he?
Against Fiorentina, which was their third win in eight days. And he played a part, as did some disastrous Fiorentina defending. But he did play a part in the winning goal. And what scenes there at the Areki. The fans who previously held up banners kind of midway through the season saying, "Dear league, please throw us out, we're sick of this," now celebrating this
because it's now in their James. What's the secret, though? Is it, it's not just him being mad, as we saw with his shoe and his crazy hair and his crazy face, or is it just about him shouting and giving them the
crazy
belief
face.
Or is there some tactical thing? Is there some, or is it just purely man management?
Look, I think they've got a fantastic sporting director who is just really instinctive about how he chooses players and has found some really good ones, like Edison, who they signed from Brazil. And also, you know, I think the players believe in Davide Nicola because he's been there and done it before, not only at Crotone, but he kept Genoa, he kept Torino up. He's just a master psychologist, I think. And, you know, I mean, they've won three games in a row, often late, so they've been hanging in games. I mean, first half, they played really well against Fiorentina. Second half, they probably didn't deserve to win, but they found a way. And also, I just think that stadium and the fan base, you know, James mentioned how they were saying, kick us out of the league. I think they can't believe they are still in the league. All of a sudden, a really deeply unpleasant experience, which they felt their dignity was kind of being trodden all over, you know, sort of in the first half of the season. They're now actually excited to be in Serie A again for the first time in a long, long time. They've been enjoying it. And you saw it. It was all the scenes at the Areki were kind of similar to when Napoli won the title in 1990, you know, in terms of the ticker tape falling down. It looked really South American. The stands are over the goal, right close up to the pitch, and just the atmosphere there, I think, is as good as any in Serie A at the moment. You know, along with what Roma and Inter. So I think they're really trying to harness that as well. So incredible momentum, and it's now in their hands. Incredibly,
in their hands, they've got a game in hand. And they got a visit from the team 3 points above them on the other side of the dotted line, Cagliari, coming up in a couple of weeks' time. Speaking of in hand, Davide Nicola's got his shoe in hand when he's not throwing it around on the sideline, as Jules was referencing there. That's got to play a big part.
Yeah, this is great man management. because he wanted to get the attention of Luca Ranieri, one of the players that they signed, I think, in January from Fiorentina. He wasn't happy with how he defended, but then of course, you know, it was how Fiorentina defended at the end that ultimately was the problem. And Igor, who was the centre back at fault, was kind of in the line of sight when Davide Nicola was kind of, you know, throwing around this shoe, and maybe he was so petrified. That's what kind of led to the mistake. So again, just brilliance from Nicola.
Yeah, could be a shoe in to stay up, or something like that. Anyway, there you go. Remarkable story. We'll be following that with great interest. Genoa are also winning at the weekend. They've got the Genoa derby next time, and they are also just 3 points now behind Cagliari. So Cagliari, with our old pal Walter Mazzari, could be in a world of trouble. Just to wrap up one or two other things before we go. Alvaro, what's going on with Barcelona? Three straight defeats at home.
Yes, and this one was a repetition of what has been going wrong for Barcelona lately. It's a team that doesn't manage to kill the game before the 70th minute, and they have to resort to Luke de Jong. That worked against Levante a couple of weeks ago, but that hasn't worked over the last two or three games. It's a team that comes onto the pitch not trying to capitalize every possession or attacking sequence they've got, and it doesn't look right now. The truth is that Barcelona had a very good period from February until mid-March, and it's not that we're looking at the past and saying, oh, maybe we exaggerated a little bit with Xavi's Barcelona. I believe that scoring four against Atletico, four against Napoli, four against Real Madrid, four against Valencia, and so on, was something special. Barcelona has a positive head-to-head against the top four in La Liga, but lately things aren't working for Barcelona. I think that the injury of Pedri has been definitely something that has triggered the crisis, because with Pedri, Barcelona wasn't playing well already in his last couple of games, but at least Pedri was deciding a few games. Then Aubameyang is not getting a lot of supply. Ferran Torres is suffering to make a difference. I think that playing on the left, he feels a little bit cornered, a little bit ostracized in that wing, and maybe he needs like a readjustment of his position. And then the truth is that Dembélé, as good as he is, or as agitator as he is, yesterday he had a very frustrating night again. The kind of night in which you wonder if it's worth for Barcelona to pay so many wages, or so much wages, to a player that actually he plays very well sometimes, but then he doesn't hit the right numbers, no? So it was a bad night for Barcelona. Also, there was a clear penalty on Gavi that the referee didn't call, and it was ludicrous, this one. And you wonder if, and I don't like talking about the referees a lot, but you wonder if what Piqué has done over the last week, or what has been leaked, Piqué just talking to Luis Rubiales, sending some audios, trying to get something for him in return, like for example asking Rubiales for Andorra not to be drowned in Andorra is the club he owns, for Andorra not to be drowned in the difficult Catalan group in the Spanish third division. For Rubiales, or for Piqué asking Rubiales whether he could play the Olympic Games, if that hasn't played a part against Barcelona indirectly, because I think that the referee yesterday, he really wanted to prove that Barcelona is not getting any kind of favor by the refs. In a way, I think indirectly he had that at the back of his mind, because otherwise I cannot find the explanation for, number one, not to call the penalty on Gavi, and number two, just to take so many decisions against Barcelona in midfield, you know, in place, in the midfield, in faults, in throw-ins and all that. So 3 weeks ago, Barcelona was looking up and saying, you know, maybe we have a chance at least fighting against Real Madrid for the title race, or at least pushing them a little bit. But now they have to look down, because if they don't qualify for the Champions League, and Betis, it looks like they're going to push to qualify for the Champions League, then they will be in trouble.
All right, how many points between Barcelona and fifth?
Barcelona and Betis, they are 6 points apart, I believe. Okay. 6 points apart. And then Atletico is fourth, 2 points away from Barcelona.
All right. Extraordinary story, that Rubiales Piqué.
Unbelievable.
Phone taps audio thing. And some, I think, sanctions on the way for Rubiales, I've seen mentioned.
Let's see. Let's see if that happens, because the thing is that Rubiales, to start with very quickly, Rubiales and Piqué both gave either press conferences, or they opened like a room chat to talk to journalists on Twitch, in the case of Piqué. None of them admitted that there was nothing wrong with that. They didn't admit the conflict of interests. Probably Piqué hasn't done anything illegal, even though he shouldn't have done what he did. But Rubiales has been investigated. He might not have met the requirements, the legal requirements, to get some help from the Spanish FA to pay his luxury flat. Apart from that, Rubiales is working on commission too. So apart from being the Spanish FA president, he's also getting a commission for every contract he gets for the Spanish FA. And you know, this is something that we knew that Rubiales could do. But if you do it with a player that could feature for the Spanish national team as well, and a player that plays in the Spanish La Liga, well, this is not exactly right.
No, indeed not. All right. Finally, let's go back to Jules for tales from Lyon. Lyon, who had a whopping 5-2 victory over Montpellier this weekend in Ligue 1. They remain, what are they, eighth?
Eighth now.
5 points off even a Conference League spot, so they've really fallen away. Jules, there was trouble.
Yeah, once again, although you look on paper, they won 5-2. It was a great afternoon, except that when Karl Toko Ekambi scored his goal in the second half, he went in front of the ultras and put his hands behind his ear and then his finger in front of his lips to say, you know, shut it. Because obviously the ultras, as we know, have been really vocal. They were not happy at all, by the way, the team lost to West Ham. And that celebration didn't go down well, as you can imagine, with the whole Courva Nord, really. And they responded in their own way by insulting Toko Ekambi. Literally, I mean, you could hear it on television. Every time he touched the ball, then trying to enter the pitch, then trying to block the players, they had to call the police and the anti-riot police as well that came to the stadium. It was really surreal. Between Saint-Etienne, Lyon and Paris, it was crazy. And again, I think we've talked about the problems very quickly of Lyon before, but I think that maybe hit home even more on Saturday, on Sunday, the fracture between the club, the players and the fans, and especially the ultras, who, as we know, have a big place in certain clubs, and certainly the case at Lyon. So I don't know what's going to happen in the summer, but they've got a lot of things to work out.
So many clubs do. All right, well, a dramatic midweek awaits us from Anfield to all those other places we mentioned as well. You're going to be speaking to Dan Juma in literally minutes.
Indeed.
Jules of Villarreal. What are you going to ask him?
What's his real name?
Great.
How we should call him? Because yep. James Horncastle obviously has a different name for him than you and I.
Groeneveld. So. That's it.
Groeneveld.
Nothing more than that.
No?
Although, when you said you're going to be interviewing Dan Juma, I almost thought it's like, you know, Daniel Juma there. Like, maybe it's a third name. Good old Danny Juma.
All right. Well, listen, good. Give him our regards.
I will do indeed.
Yeah. And enjoy. Where can we enjoy that interview, Jules?
It will be on the ESPN website, I believe, tonight, and then a few clips on social and on the ESPN shows between now and the game against Liverpool, the first
one. I always enjoy watching your interviews, Jules. So rarely we get chance to see you on air, but nice when it happens. James, you're off to the Italian embassy. And
On Thursday.
Alvaro, what have you got cooking?
What have you got cooking? Oh, just looking forward for the Champions League, James.
Yeah, me too.
Simple as that, really.
All right.
Two Spanish clubs in the UK. What else?
Could be two Spanish clubs in the final. We'll find out. Anyway, Thursday we'll be back with our regular old Totally Football show reviewing the midweek games. So do join us for that. For now, though, many thanks to Jules, Alvaro, James, producer Charlie, Christoph earlier on, and you, listener. Have a great midweek. We'll catch up with you soon. From all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.